So, my name, once again, is Russell Spatz. I am an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981. And for that, I'm grateful. And it's good to be here. It's a privilege to be here. We're on the third step tonight here, but I was on the fourth step today over at the Brickell Group, and it's just a wonderful meeting. I just got so, it was such a pleasure at that meeting. I almost want to do the four step. You're all going to have to wait till next week for that one, because I really want to do, I have a heart for working in the tie-in between faith and God and becoming transparent and seeing what's really going on in the world and seeing who you really are and what the deal is, because it's such an important topic. But I'm going to try to stick a little bit close to the deal of the third step tonight, and I'm gonna read a few things out of the book, and I'm gonna talk about my experience. Now, you know, I often say, you've heard it said in AA, I'm here to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. So, don't get too upset if I say something that pisses you off. I'll probably change my mind before I get home tonight. I'll say, why did I say that? You know, and unfortunately, when I got when I turned 20 years. I've had three sponsors, wonderful men, and my second sponsor, who I love very much, he said, I don't even consider you sober until you got 10 years. So then I got 10 years, I said, I got 10 years now, I said, I meant 20. Yeah, they were always treating me with disrespect and raising the bar and stuff like that. But somewhere along the line, I think when I had about 20 or 22 years, I came to the realization that they can't really kick you out of here. You know, I mean, you can just do whatever you want to do. And then somewhere along the line, when I lost that fear of, what is that thing? Fear of people? The fear of people deal. The thing that, you know, should I say this? Should I say that? Why did I say this? Why, you know, what does this sound like? What is it, then you become real dangerous, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous when you lose that deal. So I'm just going to let it rip. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. And this is just my experience. I think experience is very important. My first sponsor told me that line that I like to use: when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So that's the deal, you know, in here. And I graduated, I'm a lawyer by trade, and I was talking today about how when I graduated law school, you know, you have to take the bar exam. I've been a lawyer for 35 years, and the bar exam, you know, they cram, you get all this information crammed into your head. I knew more about the practice of law we were studying stuff. I'm in Miami, Florida. I'm studying riparian rights, you know, in Arizona. You know, they give you this huge test and you take it. And I suppose about 5 minutes after I was done with that test, I forgot 90% of the stuff that I studied up for. But I knew so much. I had so much knowledge. And God forbid you should hire me as a lawyer. I was so dangerous. You know, I would have destroyed you, because I knew nothing, because I had no experience. I used to talk judges into ruling against me. You can do that. You know, you study law and you become so smart and you're an alcoholic and you're brilliant and you know you're smarter than everybody else and you figure out why you're right. You know exactly why you're right. You figured it out. You can prove it mathematically you're right. And you go before the judge and you make a brilliant argument as to why you're right. And the judge says, you know, Mr. Spatz, I agree with you. I think you're right. I'm going to rule for you in this case. But not because of what you argued to me. I think you're right because of this. And then I would say, no, judge, you're wrong. And I would start explaining how he's making a mistake. And he says, you know, Mr. Spatz, you've convinced me. I am wrong. I'm going to rule for your opponent. Believe me, you can do stupid things like that when you think you're right. And, you know, you got to get a little experience. And now, after 35 years of going in the trenches and representing thousands of clients and going through a lot of trials, I've probably forgotten 90% of everything I know about jurisprudence and the law, but I just sort of see things differently, you know. It's just because of the experience. You know, people come to my office and Other lawyers see 15,000 motions they can file, you know, and 6 months of litigation, and, you know, all I think about is making one phone call. Go figure. Just making a phone call. That's a bad experience. Just make it. Sometimes things can be solved with a phone call. You know, that's an amazing thing, you know. My sponsor used to say, simplify your life. But unfortunately, everybody's going to have to go through. You know, I'm going to do the best I can to explain certain things to you. Because of my experience in working the steps through the vagaries of life, through the cancer, through the financial problems, through the problems with people, through the stuff that keeps you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, the stuff you can't talk to anybody about because they wouldn't understand, and it's embarrassing and it's shameful, but somehow you know you can't drink, so you figure out how to get through it even though you're scared crapless. Through the long nights, through the sleepless nights, through all the panicking stuff and the crazy and the drama and all that sort of stuff that goes on in your life and will go on in your life that you'll either get through or you won't get through. You're going to have to go through what I went through and working these steps, not in a vacuum, but while they're firing live ammunition at you. Because the bottom line is God is not going to stop the world and get rid of the traffic while you're trying to stay sober and working these steps. Because part and parcel of working these spiritual principles that will hopefully not only stop you from drinking, which is an important thing, but not the whole picture, because the real picture is the next frontier, emotional sobriety. It says our real problem is unhealthy dependencies, but maybe get to the point where you start identifying in the book with the part where it says, and we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. Maybe you'll go from an individual who is reading about the jaywalker, who's always screwing up over and over and over again and say, that's me, that's me, that's me, and identify with the drinking part and the resentment part and the fear part and the mind that's going a million miles per hour part, and maybe one day you'll read about the part where they said it helps the sufferer, the steps help the sufferer become happily and usefully whole, where you lose the fear of people and of economic insecurity. You know, I remember telling Ray O'Keefe one day, I said, when am I going to be economically secure? He said, never. I said, what do you mean never? It says in the book, I'll be economic. He says, that doesn't say that. He says, it says it in the book. He says, get the book out. He got the book out. He said, read it. He said, you will lose fear. He says, you're going to always be economic. You'll always be broke. He says, but it won't bother you. I said, well, thanks. Thanks for that deal, you know. And you know, the bottom line is that I walked in here like everybody else. I don't know whether I was an atheist or an agnostic. I know this. I believed in me, my brain, money, the American Express card, and Playboy bunnies. And, you know, and Hugh Hefner. And that's what I believed in. I believed in stuff I could feel and I could touch. And what the world told me then, and what it continues to tell you in stuff, in billboards, in movies, that you can be happy as long as your life looks like the most romantic situation comedy that you've ever, as long as your life looks like Pretty Woman, as long as you got a guy or you got a gal or you got a car or you got a house or you got romance or you got this stuff, or if you're 60 years old, you got Viagra, as long as you got an erection, as long as you've got sex, as long as you got the stuff that the entire universe is telling you have, you will measure yourself by that deal, and you will always feel impotent, and you will always feel less than, and you will never feel okay, and you will never feel good enough, and you will never understand why, and trust me, the entire world is telling you this stuff and dumbing down everybody, and that's all the world is saying in an Alcoholics Anonymous. For 1 hour you come here, and if you're lucky, and it's not a crazy discussion meeting where people are, all they're doing is thumb-sucking crybabies, whining about not having that stuff. If you happen to run into somebody who's actually working this program and has gotten somewhere, you might hear that it has absolutely nothing to do with any of that stuff. It has to do with, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And you'll be rocking to the fourth dimension, and maybe you'll be really lucky, and you'll actually believe it, because you'll see God manifesting himself in the behavior of old-timers and people that have worked this thing, and you'll say, I don't know what's going on with that guy, but I want what he has. And you'll be attracted to that stuff, and you'll follow that guy around. You know what I mean? And you won't drink, but that will be the least of your problems, because the bottom line is you'll have an incredible life. Maybe that'll happen to some of you. It'll happen to some, but not many. But I never knew who that some's going to be. And some will just live lives of quiet desperation, like most of the people out there, home to work, home to work, home to work, and they may not even drink. They may not drink for 20 years, but be miserable. And at 14 and 15 years, you say, how are they doing? He says, I'm hanging in there. And they'll have that kind of sobriety. They'll have the hanging in there just trying to make it from meeting to meeting to meeting, doing meetings like we used to pop pills or smoke grass or drink, using meetings as a form of substance to sort of drag yourself out of self-pity. And I suppose that's a little bit better than not drinking. And some people, basically, this is just their bar. They're just not drinking beer. They're just drinking coffee. But they're never going to get the stuff that they had in this book. But to get the stuff in this book, you got to lose some real old ideas that you've been hanging on for a long time that you don't want to be ripped away from you because it's scary. And the truth will set you free, but trust me, it's going to piss you off first, and you're going to argue against it, and you're not going to like the people that are telling you about it. Because they're going to talk about stuff that you don't want to talk about. Because in your mind, it's going to mean giving up stuff that you think you absolutely need to be okay. Because before you came in here, you knew that you couldn't live life without alcohol. You couldn't envision life without alcohol. You knew that was the only thing that worked for you in your life. And one day you came in and you made an admission and something happened to you where you finally gave up that ghost. You gave up that old idea. And all of a sudden you were living without alcohol and you couldn't even envision drinking again. You said, this is unbelievable. Only to discover, perhaps later on, through AA meetings or through stuff that's going on in your life, that there may be other stuff that you worship, that is your God, that you are, that idols in your life, whether it be the job, whether it be money, whether it be your home, whether it be other people, that you worship, that your mood and who you are and everything you think about and everything about you and your whole reflection, your whole life is tainted and colored by what's going on with him, with her, with it, with the boss, and it runs you ragged like you're on a leash. And somebody tells you, you got to give up that stuff, and you say, you don't know what you're talking about. Because what you really want to do is you just want to control that stuff. You just want to manage that stuff so that you'll never get hurt, and then you read some sort of book where every time you come into AA, it says, we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives, and you listen to that, there's no human power that can refit you, only God fix you, only God could and would if you had sought. And you listen to that, and then you walk right out, and you spend the next 24 hours before you get to the next meeting trying to figure out how to manage your life. Spending an entire thought process on trying to manage your life and never understanding why you never feel okay. Because you're not even working the program. You're just nibbling around the outsides of it, and you're never going to get this deal. And so what I talk about in this thing, I'm not going to talk about the drinking. You're going to have to take my word for it. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 31 years old, when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. And if you're an alcoholic, believe me, you can rip people's hearts out. You become shamefully drunk. You can hurt a lot of people. You can hurt yourself and somehow convince yourself that you're the best and you're on top of the world. And you can do that for years. But it came to a point in my life where I no longer could fool myself. I had to look in the mirror and said, who am I kidding? And I was lucky enough to come in here, and I wanted to stop drinking, but even more than that, I wanted to hang out with certain people. I didn't realize everybody wasn't like this, because this is a program of attraction. And as we talked about in the first step, the first thing I had to do is I had to find my we. I didn't even know I was looking for my we. You know, it says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. That's a step before the steps. You're not even ready to take the steps unless you want what we have. Because if you don't want what we have, you're not even going to listen to somebody about the steps. You know, some people come in here, they don't want what we have. They don't even know what we have. They just want to get back in the big bed. They want their house back. They want the criminal charges away. You know what they want? They want to get back to the same life that they were leading before they came here. They don't want to listen to me. They don't want to listen to the gossip. They don't want any of that. Leave me alone. I just want to stop drinking and get those criminal charges away from me. I want my wife back. I want my husband back. I want the money back. They just want everything that they had going for them back. They don't want what we have. And some people, you know, they sort of want what we have. They'd like to have what we have. They're just not willing to go to anything. They want what we have, but I'm not going to give up Sally. I mean, sure, she's a heroin addict, but, you know, I love her. You know, I love her. It's love. As if an alcoholic even knows what love is. When for us, the only, what love really is for us is me, 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 me. You scratch the surface of my love, it's all about me. It's only about me. It's about me and my ego. God forbid if a woman should leave me. Now, if she gets run over by a truck and she dies, that's okay. I mean, I'll miss her, but at least, you know, she's dead. But, I mean, it's not her fault. But leave me? Forget it. Because I loved her. So I'm in love. Love. So I'm going to read a couple of things. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the third step. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of the things is, as I said, I'm 62. I'm a little bit of facts. I've been married for 30 years. My sponsor said, don't make any major decisions during your first year. So after I had 2 months, I got married. I didn't think it was a big deal, you know. You know, I'm thinking, you know, it wasn't, it ended up being okay. I had like 4 kids and 6 grandkids, and I love them all. They're great, you know. I mean, there's a lot of them, you know. I mean, I don't even know who they, I forget their names sometimes. Yeah, they come to the table, I say sit down, they get fed. And so in any event, but one of the things that happens is, you know, when you're, I'm 30 years sober. I'll be 31, God willing, in January. And I think like somebody who's 30 years sober. I don't think like somebody who's 30 days sober. I mean, I can't apologize for that. I'm not putting down anybody. I had 30 days sober. I had 6 months. You know, if somebody, I'll go to a meeting and I will hear somebody with 30 days talk about some things that are on their mind, some problems. And I love it, because what happens is when I need newcomers so badly, it's such a pleasure for me to have newcomers. Not that I look down on them or anything, but it's a pleasure because they talk about things that are going on in my mind, and I remember, you know? I remember when I used to think like that. Now I remember how that felt. You know, and the truth of the matter is that I felt the way I feel right now, you know, that new freedom, that new happiness, that stuff that's going on for so long now that I've sort of forgotten that. Doesn't make me a bad, I mean, that's, it, you know, you don't live the dramatic, crazy, panic-driven, from crisis to crisis, what's the next thing that's going to happen, the next thing, and then the next thing. It's like a never-ending series of crises in your life. You know, each one going to hurt you and going to be the end of your life. You live that for a while and you get so used to that kind of life. Just battling the crazies out there and the nuts and all the people that are out to hurt you and the traffic and everything like that. Just trying to battle that stuff that you think it'll never go away. And then one day it goes away for 5 minutes. You say, whoa, what is that? It goes away for an hour. Yeah, but you know it's coming back. You know it's coming back. You know you're missing something. You know, I remember going up to my sponsor and I said, I don't know, I feel funny. He says, what's wrong? You worried about it? He says, no, I'm not worried. He says, you're scared. No. You're mad. He says, no, I just feel, I feel strange. He says, that's serenity. Don't worry, you'll get used to it. You know, it's hard to get used to that stuff when you got 50,000 voices going through your brain and it's all about you and it's all bad stuff about you and other people. You know, and you're living that life, and you think that's the way it'll always be, and it's not about the alcohol. You're 18 months sober, and you got that crap going on, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's going around in your brain, and it's whizzing in your brain, and you know it's not alcohol because you haven't had a drink in 18 months. It's something called alcoholism. And then all of a sudden you realize for the first time, now I know why I drank. Now I know what alcoholism feels like. I never knew what alcoholism felt like. Because the moment alcoholism raised its ugly head with me, I'd say, I need a drink. And then I would use the stuff, we call it alcohol, by the way, to chase away the alcoholism, so I never got to experience alcoholism. Why would anybody experience alcoholism when you can drink? So all I experienced was something called drunk. And that's what I thought the problem was. I thought the problem was drunk. I didn't think it was alcoholism. I thought I was pretty much a good guy in a good world with a good mind and very smart. And my problem is I couldn't stop drinking. So once I got rid of the drinking, it would be okay. But the only thing the drinking was doing for me for years, it was the only thing that was saving me from the alcoholism. I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have it do for them what it did for me and stop. You're not going to do it. It was like the magic elixir. You know, it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes about once by taking a few drinks. That's restless, irritable, and discontented sober. So if you're sober, you got a big problem. That's where the problem starts. So now you're sober, and you got 3 months, and you got 6 months, and you got 5 years, and you got 10 years. And it's good, and it's bad, and it's like a roller. It's good, it's bad, it's up, it's down. That's like the first hour. It's like a roller coaster. And when's it going to ever be okay? And then one day it's okay for an hour, and one day it's okay for a week. And one day it's okay for a month, and then one day it's okay for 10 years. That's the way it is. And that's the deal. Let me read a couple things to you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to, if I can, what I can talk to you about is what it's like for me today. That's sort of fresh in my mind. And believe me, with my I've got to tell you something, I've gotten so stupid. If you wanted to catch me when I was really sharp, you should have caught me during my first, you know, 6 months or so. I've gotten progressively dumber in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to be, I had certificates on the wall. I told you that. Certificates showing up. I was National Science Foundation Fellowship, graduate Department of the Lines of Mathematics, going for my PhD in algebraic topology, you know, law school. I said to my first sponsor, I said, look at all the degrees on my wall. He said, Russell, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. That's the way he used to talk to me. He didn't even graduate sixth grade. Once he told me, he said, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. And I had to sit there and try to figure out what that meant because I didn't understand what that meant. It took me about a half an hour to realize the dog doesn't know his father. You know what I mean? I mean, there was stuff. That's the way they used to talk to me. Where do they get this stuff? There must be some sort of sponsorship school in, like, in the middle of Georgia or something, you know what I mean? Where I've been alive for 31 years, gone through all sorts of college postgraduate work, you know, all sorts of stuff. I'd never heard, people had never talked to me that way. I'd never heard people talk to me the way they talked to me, sharing the stuff they shared with me. It was not part of my bibliography or lexicon or anything. A whole different deal. So I want to read a couple of things to you, okay? First of all, I want to read this part. This is on page 266. This is from a story. It's called He Sold Himself Short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose. Not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. But above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's the only thing I can talk to you about in here. I can talk to you about that. I can't talk to you about getting a car, getting a yacht. I can't talk to you about getting a mate, you know, on whatever that is, e-something.harmony.com. I can't talk to you about that stuff. You're going to have to go out into the world and find out about that stuff. I can't talk to you about your sex life or, you know, finding a man or a woman or getting... I can't talk to you about that stuff. I can only talk to you about this. You know, if you're not interested in this, if you're not interested in that, then you and I have nothing to talk about. We honestly don't have anything to talk about. You're just going to have to go out there and chase after the stuff you want to chase that you think will make you happy. And I hope you find it. And after you've chased it for a while, if you haven't killed yourself and you're still around, maybe we can talk about this stuff. This is the stuff I can talk to you about. This is the only stuff I know about. I don't know about the other stuff. Because like it says in the seventh step, that other stuff, the absolute romance and the prestige and the money, it never worked for me. And I got a lot of it. I was out there, you know, beating the bushes, looking for her. You know, she, the one who was going to fix me. You know, looking for the job that was going to fix me. Looking for the money that was going to fix me. Looking for everything that was going to fix me. It never fixed me. From here, I was a better read another book, get a little smarter, get in some fame. What is it? Never fixed me. If a mere amount of morals, better philosophy of life would have fixed us, we would have been better a long time ago. That's what the big book says in chapter Ignatius. It says lack of power. That was my dilemma. I had to find a power greater than myself that would solve my problem. That means we wrote a book where we're going to talk about God. So if you want to talk to me about AA and what an AA existence is about and what you need to find a faith in order to get through this life that works, you're going to have to talk to me about God. And the fact that you don't want to talk to me about God only means to me that you're not ready. You haven't met that man or that woman who's fired your imagination. You know, because what I had to do is I had to find people in this program that manifest, you know, listen, the God thing is good and I have a relationship with him right now. I have a relationship with him. Now, but I got to tell you something. When I first came in, I had to see the manifestations of him reflected in other people, in their behavior, in their life, and what they faced. I had to see the men that were dying and weren't scared. I had to see the people that were in incredible problems and got through it without any difficulty whatsoever. I had to see the people that were steady all the time. Not that sometime, all the time. That I always felt safe being around because they were like rocks. And I had to see that they had abundant faith in God. I had to see that deal. And I had to see the people that were bouncing all over the place. From romance to romance, from money to money, from scheme to scheme. I had to see those people bounce around too. And I had to make a decision what I wanted. You know, did I want to be right and smart and brilliant and sarcastic? Or because I'm a recovering know-it-all too, or whether I wanted to be happy. I had to decide, do I want to be happy? You know, did I want to not only stop drinking, but be... I had to make those decisions. So let me read a couple of things to you in here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you. Ask him in your morning meditations. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. He says, we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, which, by the way, comes from, I think it's either the book of Corinthians, the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. All through this book, even at the beginning of this book, on page 29, this is what it says. On page 29. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Now listen to this. This is in the big book. This is conference-approved stuff. This is what it says. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Now I know you think what an A-meeting is about, and there's nothing wrong with this. I love good drunkologues. Drunkologues are important. I love listening to a good, funny, entertaining, it's almost like a comedy show for us, an entertainment show. It fires our imagination. We laugh. We feel like, man, this A is really good. We just go out laughing and happy. I know that's what you think the deal is. And that's necessary in order to get our attention and get us to identify. But that is not the deal. And if all you get is that entertainment, then you are involved in AA sitcom, in the AA Entertainment Network. This is not about that. It says right here, it says, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's the story. That's the Roland Hazard story. That's the Bill Wilson story. In the back of the book, in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. And if you cut yourself out of that story, you cut yourself out of the banquet that's in store in Alcoholics Anonymous. In Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson's story, he talks about how he knew there was something he hadn't got. He was sitting around listening to Bill Wilson, and this is what he says. He says this. It would be hard to estimate. He was 3 weeks out of the hospital. 3 weeks out, 3 or 4 weeks out of the hospital. He was sitting in his living room or his kitchen with Bill Wilson and his wife Henrietta. And this is what he says on page 191. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. Now listen to this. This is what he says. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I haven't got. I used to go to meetings and watch these old-timers, these guys for 20, 30 years. I used to sit with them. And I knew I was an alcoholic. And I knew they were an alcoholic. And I knew I was an AA. And I knew they were an AA. And I knew I was working a program of recovery. And I knew and I assumed and I imagined and I knew they were working a program of recovery. But I want to tell you something. They were doing a different deal than me. I spoke about this last week with Tiger Woods. I mean, I play golf from time to time. You know, once every 6 months, I've got golf clubs, and I go out on the course, and I get in a cart, and I hit the ball sometimes with a bunch of other guys. And Tiger Woods plays golf. And he goes out on the same course with the same clubs and the same, you know, balls. And he does the same, and he swings too. But I got to tell you something. We may both be playing golf, but he's not playing the game I'm playing. He's playing at a level, at a place that it's even beyond golf. It's a spiritual thing. It's something, you see this with Olympic athletes. Only a few people, they get to a level, they are so intensely consumed and focused on this deal that they are playing something that bears little relationship to what I'm dabbling in. I was a dabbler, and they are focused, and they get the benefit of that deal. And these men I hung around with, they weren't dabblers. They weren't dilettantes, you know, talking this stuff. And, you know, most people read this book. They don't even see 90% of stuff into it because it scares them, so they ignore it. They do the stuff that's comfortable. They forget the stuff that's uncomfortable. They don't want to stretch. They don't want to go further because they're scared they might lose something that they think they need to have. And they end up thinking that what this program is about is the one line, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And it's not. Sometimes courage is the answer. Faith is always the answer. And it's not. And the man and woman you'll be 5 years from now will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And trust me, the books you read will depend upon who you hang out with. You want to find out what's going on with you? You find out who your friends are and who you're talking to and who you're having conversations with. And why don't you just think about what the conversations are about? Macy's, Bloomingdale's, shoes, clothes, cars, women, men. You think about what your conversations are about. That's who you are. You want to be a vapid on the surface person who says, well, I'm spiritual, whatever that means. There is no spirituality. You know, people say, I'm in here like I'm spiritual, like it's some sort of quality they have. Anybody who says I'm spiritual and they think it's some sort of quality they have, they don't understand what it means to be a powerless alcoholic. Because I don't have any quality of spirituality. You know what I have? I'm selfish, I'm self-centered. I know exactly who I am. I know what I did. I see it clearly. I know what I'm capable of doing now. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. I don't have any quality of spirituality. Any quality I have that you might call spiritual, anytime you might say to me, well, he's spiritual, is the same thing they're talking about in this book. They never talk about spirituality in this book if it's not talking about at the same time the willingness to look to God and to do his works well. It's always talked in terms of, let me tell you something. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've heard of gratitude lists. I remember one time I was on the expressway and I had a flat tire and I called up my sponsor and I said, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. I'm stuck on the expressway with a flat tire. And he said to me this. He said, you have a car? You have a car? I said, wait. He says, well, that sounds a good problem. He says, you know, some people don't have cars. And then I called him up the next day and I said, you wouldn't believe what my boss is doing. I can't believe this stuff. I can't stand this guy. He says, you have a job? And then I called him back. I can't believe the toilet's overflowing my house and I got to spend another day. He says, you have a home? And he'd always answer me. And after a while, I stopped calling him. Because he's like embedded in my head. And I became great. Every time I'd have a problem, it showed me one more thing I should be grateful for. And he like warped me. But you want to know something? I was grateful for things. I was still it was still better than I was doing because I wasn't always focused on what I didn't have. And I was grateful for things, but far more superior than that to be grateful for is to be grateful to. Because grateful to never leaves you. And it's about a relationship. Grateful to God for your sobriety. Grateful to God for what you've got. Grateful to is a relationship. And it's with you always, even without the stuff. Even without the stuff. And so it says in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, it says, I notice that others seem to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. You ever go to a meeting or you meet somebody or see somebody in AA or something like that and you say, man, it's like Tiger Woods. I mean, there's something going on. I don't know what he's got. There's something I haven't got. I don't have that yet. There's something more. There's something I haven't got. That's what he was doing. Something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. What was he doing? He was hanging around Bill. He was hanging around these people that had that deal that he wanted what we had. He had his we. Bill was part of his we. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. Bill didn't even know this guy was listening. He was three weeks sober. He wrote this when he had 15 years. He never forgot that statement. I think I have the answer. Bill was very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing. He was grateful that he was released. But here's the main thing, this terrible thing. And he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me too. And you sit around the AA meetings and guys are pissing and moaning, he's going to talk about that guy. That guy talks too much about God. Understand something about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a fellowship of alcoholics. Defined in the extreme. Not wanting to give up their old ideas. Not really wanting to change. Stubborn. Every one of them think they know they're smarter than the other person. They should get the attention. Every one of them bankrupting their lives and living lives of quiet desperation, but putting on a face and not being transparent and not telling anybody. All congregating in a room together, and the last thing they want to do is listen to anybody or change or give up anything. And understand you're working with that group, and the main focus of that group is to somehow, some way get through this thing without doing any of this crap in the book. through any type of rationalization, telling rational lies, well, it's do your own thing, it's God as you understand, whatever way to somehow talk your way out of the plain language of this book. Because that would be fanatical, and then people laugh at you, and God forbid we don't want people laughing at us because we're so worried about what other people think about us. Oh, I know you're alcoholics, so you don't give a shit what people think about you. That's what we say. I don't care what they think about me. But you know, anybody who says I don't care what they think about me, all they do is think all day, what are they going to think about me? What do they think about me? Because people don't care what other people think about them. Don't say I don't care what they think about me. They say things like, pass us off. Right? So all you do your entire life is your head up your ass trying to look, what did you order? What are you doing, you know? What are other people doing, you know, even when you get out of treatment? What's the first thing you say? Well, if somebody asked me where they have a drink, what should I say? Give me the cover story. Well, if you have a brain in your head, you should slap the shit out of them, right? They're trying to kill you. But you need a cover story. You need something to tell them so that they'll like you. Because if you can't give me the story to tell them, what do I say? They may laugh at me, or I may be humiliated, or they may like me, and I would rather kill myself and drink and take the drink and fit in than risk the possibility that some bozo who doesn't even pay my American Express might not like me. And that's the kind of self-esteem most alcoholics have when they come in. And by the way, that's the kind of self-esteem most alcoholics have even after 15, 20 years. Has nothing to do with anything going on inside. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us even without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which places the position to be hurt. This is the real problem with alcoholism, selfishness and self-centeredness. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They're right out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything. Now listen to this. This is, in my opinion, you can go back and say, well, Russ, this is the book. This is the book. You know, I have people who have read this book, and I read this stuff, and they say, I really like what you said when you said, I say, you mean when I read the book? Because they never really saw it. Because they skipped over it to the parts they liked. It says, above everything, which means above everything. It's not complicated. We alcoholics must be rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Kills us. That's how serious it is. This is what it says right after that. You know what it says right after that? God makes that possible. And it's mentioned, God is mentioned 800 times. And whenever you talk about him, you call him higher power or something like that, because you don't call him God, because you don't want to be criticized. So you'd rather go along and dumb this thing down and water this thing down and make this a powerless program and remove the powerless from it because you're scared of what somebody else will think than use the words that are in the book. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. How do you do that? I didn't even know I was playing God. That's why you need a sponsor. That's why you need these bozos in your life saying hurtful things to you that hurt your feelings. I said to him, I said, I'm sensitive. He said, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. That's why you need other people in your life, because I never know I'm running my life. I never know I'm running the show. I always think I'm the good guy or the best guy or the worst guy. I never get it right. I always get it wrong. And we're going to talk a little bit about that when I go into the fourth step next week. It says this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after, in this trauma of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we passed the bridge. This is the key deal. And I'm going to read one other thing, then we're going to quit. And here's the deal. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened. And I want to tell you something. I did what they told me to do. I got on my knees in my bathroom, God forbid somebody should see me, You know, I said the prayer, the third step prayer, you know, because I didn't, you know, I did the stuff they told me to do. You know why I did it? Because I wanted what they had. I didn't necessarily believe in it. I just did it. I just followed directions. God honors that. He honors that. When you do stuff, even though you don't really believe, he honors that. You know, when did I sincerely take such that a position? It may have been 20 years later. I'm telling you. I honored all this stuff. I got on my knees. I said the prayers. I did the stuff. I did it over and over again. And I'm not saying I didn't have faith. I developed a faith in God. I developed, things started working out. It happened early on. I didn't have a Bible, but when did it become since? When did it start taking over my life? Maybe when I had 15 years. When all my focus was on Him. And I stopped worrying about what you thought about me. I started going to Bible study. I started reading the stuff, the material these guys were reading who wrote this book. I didn't give a crap about some bozo in the A room looking at me funny. I didn't care about that. I just wanted more. I knew there was more, something I hadn't got. And I knew this wasn't a dress rehearsal. I didn't want to fool around anymore with the surface stuff. I started taking it seriously. And I started hanging around with people that were taking it seriously. And they introduced me to other people that were taking it seriously. And you want to know what happened to me when that happened? I'll tell you what happened. It says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things. You know what happened? My life became remarkable. Now, I don't know what you want. Maybe you just want to throw a buck into the kitty. Have a couple of guys say hi. Go to birthday night or stuff like that. I don't know about that. I want a remarkable life. That's what I want to hang around remarkable people. You know, I don't want to be, or I just want to be normal. Normal? My God, what if you hit it? You mean like them? That's what you want to be like? They said the Mother Teresa, they followed her around. Dr. New York Times says, I wouldn't do what you did for $1 million. She said, neither would I. Money doesn't run me. It says right here, it says, we had a new employer being all powerful. He's not a higher power. He's the highest power, and there's only one. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now, you don't have to say Russ is saying that this is what you have to do. I'm not saying that. That's what the book Alcoholics Anonymous is saying. Now, I don't know what fellowship you belong to or what book you're reading, but I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it says he will always take care of me, give me everything I need if I stay close to him and perform his work well. So when you come up to me and you tell me about your girlfriend and your boyfriend, all I want to know is what does that have to do with him and performing his work? And the fact that you're pissed at me and you don't want to talk about that, you just want to get your girlfriend back, doesn't mean anything to me. Because you're still grasping at the crap in that world that is going to get you back to drinking again. Because that's what's important to you. And you and I are not going to be able to have a conversation. Because we're at a different deal. Because that's what I'm going to ask you. What does this have to do with him? And somehow, some way, I'm going to direct you to him. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Now, if you're not interested in that stuff, we got nothing to talk about. Because you're still chasing the old life. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. So, you know, here's the deal. I'm going to wrap this up. We'll go like a minute over. It won't kill you. I used to sit in a bar. My wife would be waiting for me with a child at home. You know, I was supposed to be home at 7 o'clock. I'd get home at 3 in the morning. I've never seen more alcoholics conscious of time than after they get sober. You know, the bottom line with this deal is, here's how it's going to work for you. This is how it's going to work. I'm going to tell you how it's going to work. I just did my spiel. It doesn't even mean anything. It's just some stuff I'm throwing out there, some of my experience. Probably didn't explain anything. Who knows? You know what I've learned about this deal? And I never know who it is. It could be the guy, there could be a guy back there saying, boy, this guy's full of crap. There's probably at least one guy, maybe more, saying, I ain't going that deal. It may be that guy 10 years from now. Believe it or not, sometimes it's the guys that hate it the most You know, they say when you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. Sometimes it's the guy that gets pissed off the most that goes back and thinks about it, gets pounded and everything like that, and he remembers. You know what I mean? You never know who it's going to be. But somehow, through God's Spirit, through this program, through working this thing, through the difficulties in life, and through the, you know how they say in the 12 and 12, the suffering that you're going to go through, because you're going to go through, everybody's going to go through the desert time, everybody's going to go through the suffering. You know, they talk about you're going to lose stuff, people are going to die, you're going to have money problems, you're going to go through that. Somehow through this stuff, you're going to start connecting the dots. And you're going to decide what you want, how you want to be, what kind of person you want to be. You just want to be one of those people that's hanging in there, not drinking one day at a time. Nothing wrong with not drinking. I know there's some old fool in the back saying, put the plug in the jug and that's all it takes. Don't worry about any of this God stuff. And you can follow him. He generally doesn't sponsor a lot of people. He just sits in the back and says that shit. You know what I mean? Or you can have a remarkable life. You can have a remarkable life. You could have one of the two. You know, you can decide. And the great thing is, it's your life. You understand? You don't have to worry about what your next door neighbor thinks, or what I think, what this person thinks. It's your life. It's not a dress rehearsal. You don't want to be on your deathbed and say, man, I could have had a V8. Yeah. Why didn't I do that? Why did I do that? Because I was worried about what my Aunt Molly might think, or because I was worried about what this month think? Why didn't I go for the gold? Why didn't I run the race? It was right there in front of me. That fool was talking about it. I was listening to him. Why did I walk off and go back to the other stuff? When I knew this was this whole other, you know, you can belong to the not drinking club or you can join the Fellowship of the Spirit. And believe me, they're two different things. Thank you very much. God bless you. Yeah.